Are you enjoying this podcast? Well, you have KUOW members to thank for that. KUOW members make the trusted local journalism and storytelling you hear on this show possible. Become a member today and help support the production of this podcast. It only takes a minute. Make a donation at KUOW.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Diana Opong in for Libby Denkman. Scientists at Washington State University have been at it again.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
No, they're not reanimating anything, but they have made a sort of Frankenstein by combining two beloved apples into a brand new hybrid varietal. It's called WA64, for now. WSU wants the public to help find the perfect name for this new fruit. To get to the core of this apple creation, we're going to peel back some facts with Kate Evans. She's a horticulturist, fruit breeder, and professor at the Washington State University's Tree Fruit Research and Extension Center in Wenatchee, Washington. And she helped develop WA64. Kate, welcome. Okay, tell us how you created an entirely new type of apple. Can you break down the process?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, your description of a hybrid is exactly what it is, but it's not gene splicing or based in a lab. There's, you know, I'm a scientist, but I'm this apple and all of our apples are created out in the orchard. We use exactly the same high-tech technology that a bee uses, right? I mean, we're just transferring pollen from one variety to another variety. The difference For me as a breeder is that I'm choosing which two parents I'm using. So I choose very carefully which pollen and which flower I would like to use to make my hybrid. And then literally I'm just transferring pollen, usually with an eraser on the end of a pencil from one variety to the other. And in this case, it was pollen from the Cripps pink apple to a Honeycrisp apple tree. Then we just wait for that flower to do its thing, make a fruit, and in that fruit are lots of seeds. And each one of those seeds is a unique combination of its two parents. So that's the hybrid. But we have thousands of those, and my job is to then evaluate them and to choose the best one.
So you're evaluating seeds, not just the fruit, but the seeds themselves to start with.
Well, okay, we start with a seed, but then we germinate the seeds. We're not really doing any evaluation on the seeds. We're growing the seeds into seedlings. We then very rapidly, well, okay, within about 5 or 6 years, those seedlings are about 6 or 7 feet tall, planted in the orchard, and they're seedling trees. And what I'm looking for is the fruit that each one of those produces, because every single tree is unique in the same way that you and your siblings would be very similar, but different. You've got the same two parents, but, you know, you've all got your individual quirks, right? And yeah. What I'm looking for is the best one of those seedling trees based on its fruit quality, to then, okay, make more trees of. I can replicate that tree using vegetative propagation to make more trees of the same thing, get more fruit, and do more detailed evaluation.
Got it. Okay. So when you're starting this process, which sounds like it's a long process, when you're doing it, when you're starting out trying to create this new apple, is there an end goal? Like, are you saying, I want an apple that is a certain color or has a certain flavor profile?
Yeah, really good question. To some extent, yes. But really what we're focusing on in my breeding program is to create new apple varieties that will be a portfolio of different varieties that will meet the consumer preferences that we know are wide ranging. So no real specific preference in terms of a color type, but obviously we get a lot of difference between those seedlings. Fruit quality is the absolute main thing, because this is a fresh fruit product. Consumers want that great eating experience from an apple. But some consumers like their apples firmer than others. Some like their apples sweeter than others or more tart. So I'm kind of trying to find something that, or several different apples that have a range of those different preferences. And my other target, because I'm breeding for the state of Washington, and here we are as being the major apple producer in the US, about sort of, 65% of the US apple crop comes from Washington. I also want to make sure that new varieties that I'm selecting will store very well in refrigerated storage and keep that fruit quality for many months so that the consumer in April or May has a gooder eating experience as they possibly can. So it's retained that high level of fruit quality through storage.
And are there other traits that you're looking for, Kate, as you try to cultivate, like hardiness or disease resistance?
Some of my program focuses on disease resistance. There's a fairly devastating bacterial disease that we have in the US called fire blight. It will kill an orchard if you're not careful, and the trees kind of look burnt, which is why it's called fire blight. They go black and sort of curl up. Pretty devastating. So I have sort of part of my program where I'm focusing on increasing the level of resistance to that particular disease. But really, that's the only main other focus, because the program has to focus on what that consumer has, what that eating quality experience for the consumer is.
And if you're crossbreeding using seeds, how long does it take to see results? It sounds like it's at least 6 years, maybe more.
Yes. I mean, obviously, even to get the seed in the first place, you have to wait for the apple to grow. So that in itself takes about 6 months. Then the seed needs to have a bit of chill before it germinates, so that's another few months. But after that, we won't really see fruit on a tree until the tree is about 6 or 7 years old. So to get that first fruit takes quite a long time. And then what I'm doing is I do sort of several rounds of propagation and making more trees of the same thing. And more detailed evaluation before I decide that, hey, this apple is robust enough to make it out there in commercial production and has got, all these great fruit quality traits that we think consumers will like.
And I'm fascinated by this, Kate. I had no idea this much time and effort went into producing apples and also how long it took. It's my understanding that WA64 was first cultivated in 1998. That was 26 years ago. Does it usually take this long to perfect an apple variety, nearly 3 decades?
Yeah, sometime between around sort of 20 to 30 years. I mean, really, it depends on just how much evaluation you do. And there are other varieties that have been released from other places that perhaps haven't had as much evaluation. But we really feel that because we are such a major apple producing state, we want to make sure that when we're releasing something, we're not giving our growers a dud, right? I mean, it's a big investment for a grower to plant a new orchard with a new variety. And so we want to make sure that we're doing our due diligence in evaluating that potential new variety as well as we absolutely can. And we do a lot of that evaluation in collaboration with stakeholders, with industry members, with the Washington Tree Fruit Research Commission. So we have kind of independent validation on the quality of these potential new releases.
Wow, that's really cool. Okay, so we've talked about some of the traits and the things that you are looking for when you're searching and developing the traits. But what makes an apple successful? You have to convince farmers to grow it, and as you mentioned, it takes a lot of time and effort to invest in that. And stores also have to stock it in their produce section. So what do you think people have to consider, researchers have to consider when making sure an apple is successful?
That's the business side of the new variety. I always find it really fascinating because apples are one of the only fresh fruit products that consumers know by name. I don't know how many varieties of strawberries that you could list, but probably not very many, right? And how many peach varieties, et cetera. Consumers are very much focused. They know apple varieties by name. Choosing that good name is something that I think is important. And then having a sort of brand recognition that goes along with it, so that as a consumer, you recognize it when you see it in the store, and that sort of triggers that, oh yes, that's the one I tried last time. I really liked it. I remember the name. I'll go back and I'll try it again.
When do you anticipate that we'll be able to get our hands on these apples? When will we see them in stores?
Well, I'm afraid you're going to have to be a bit patient for seeing them in the stores. We're not expecting them to come out into the stores until 2029. So
No, Kate, no.
I know. We're going to get trees out to growers in 2026, which in itself is coming up fast. But of course, you have to wait for those trees to grow. You don't instantly get fruit. We need the grower needs to be able to grow the tree to produce that woody structure that's then going to produce the apples. So it all takes time.
Yeah. So, Kate, this isn't your first foray into apple creation. You helped develop the last big hit of the apple world, the Cosmic Crisp. That's a cross between the Honey Crisp and the Enterprise Apple. So, first off, the Cosmic Crisp is a wild success. It's like your Billboard charts here. How hard is it to follow that?
Oh yeah, it is, it's difficult, but on the other hand, I think that now there is that bit more level of interest from stakeholders and from consumers in the fact that, oh, actually, WSU can produce good quality apples from the breeding program. We should be paying attention. So I think every apple is unique. Every apple is going to do its own thing in terms of its level of success. And a lot of it varies not just on the apple itself, but on the timing of when it hits the industry, and what else is going on at that point in time. So, my focus is to produce a portfolio of different types of apple for consumers with different preferences. And so, I look at them all as just individuals of part of this portfolio.
And once a new variety of apple is created, Kate, who owns it?
Oh, yeah, good question. So, in the case of my breeding program, all of the intellectual property, that's what it's called,
Yep, IP.
the IP, that's all that is Washington State University's property.
Nice. And how can farmers get their hands on this variety, and how does it get to the stores? What's that process?
Well, we will be releasing to the growers within the state of Washington. So we'll be restricting it to Washington only production in the US, which is the same as what we've done with Cosmic Crisp. I'm not sure if you're aware that Cosmic Crisp in the US is only grown in the state of Washington. Part of our WSU land grant mission, we're supporting the growers of our state. So we're working already with tree nurseries to start propagating material to build up the amount of budwood so they can make more trees for sale. That's ongoing right now. Growers will put in orders to the nurseries as they do for any other variety.
Okay, and Washington State University is asking for help to name WA64. For some reason, they don't think that's catchy enough. How will that work, and how can people participate?
WA64 is not the most catchy name, but it is, I have to say, it is the patent name for this particular apple. And it's sort of part of our process. It's actually the 64th selection that moved into the advanced phase of selection in the program, which is why it has that bizarre name. Cosmic Crisp was actually WA38, to give it its context.
Nice.
Yes, WSU is really interested in having ideas from the general public about potential new names for this apple. They can track down the website and put in a recommendation, a suggestion for what they think would be a good name. The competition is open until May the 5th.
Before we go, Kate, I gotta ask you about a fruit trend that I'm noticing in the produce section when I go to the grocery store. There are all these new novelty fruit flavors, like cotton candy grapes or Concord grape flavored apples. What's up with that? Is that a different process from what you're doing here, creating new apples?
Yes. The cotton candy grape is produced through plant breeding, through making a hybrid, which is the same process as the WAR64. So it's exactly the same. And the grape flavored apple is different. It's actually an infusion of grape flavor that is kind of infused into the apple variety. So when the apple is already grown and already, you know, the piece of fruit, then the flavor is infused in.
That's interesting, though. So that's an infused apple versus it was grown to have that flavor.
Correct.
Okay. This is so fascinating. This is like a whole world that exists that I knew nothing about. So it's so fun to talk to you, Kate. Okay. So if people want to participate in helping to name WA64 something cool, you can go to wsu.edu/WA64contest. Kate Evans is a horticulturalist, fruit breeder, and professor at the Washington State University's Tree Fruit Research and Extension Center in Wenatchee, Washington. Kate, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for your interest, and I hope you love the apple.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. By the way, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.